This message comes from NPR sponsor, Discover. Tired of not getting a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Hey, y'all. Sam here. I have a favor to ask. We on the show here, we're like a little over 2 years old. And you know, when a baby gets to be a toddler, things start changing. They start walking, exploring, showing personality, etc. This show is doing that as well. We're going to begin to make some changes on this show, and we want your input as we grow. So let us know how to make this show better. Go to npr.org/samsurvey and answer all the questions. npr.org/samsurvey. Thank you.
Hey, y'all. This is Sam's Aunt Betty. This week on the show, host of NPR's Embedded, Kelly Meg Evers, and Los Angeles Times national correspondent covering 2020, Matt Pierce. All right, let's start the show.
Hey, y'all. From NPR, I'm Sam Sanders. It's been a minute. Happy weekend to my listeners and to my guest, Kelly Meg Evers, NPR correspondent and host of the NPR podcast Embedded, and Matt Pierce, 2020 campaign reporter for the LA Times, covering the 2020 election.
Hello.
Cray cray, I can't believe you even have time to be here. Thanks for being here.
Oh, I'm so happy to be here.
Good. We are joined right now in studio by the sounds of the Lion King. Meticulous planning, tenacity. This is a new version of Be Prepared, sung by Scar, played by Chiwetel Ejiofor in the new Lion King.
Right, the live action.
Yes.
Yes, my teeth and ambitions are bare. Be prepared.
Do we like that?
I approve. I'm into it.
He didn't sing it. He just like whisper spoke it.
Be prepared.
He's supposed to be
prepared.
Right?
Didn't Elton John come out this week and say like they messed up the music?
Yes, this is why I'm playing
it. Oh, okay.
So I'm playing this updated version of Be Prepared as recorded by Chiwetel Ejiofor because Elton John, who wrote this music in the 90s with Tim Rice for the original, he said this week in a wide-ranging interview with GQ magazine, the new version of The Lion King was a huge disappointment to me because I believe they messed the music up. The magic and joy were lost.
I don't know. I mean, like, I like the performance.
Let's play the original for a second so we can hear the old one back in the day with Jeremy Irons. I know it sounds sordid,
but you'll be rewarded. Yeah, well, this is more this is
yeah, I mean, it's show business.
Exactly. Exactly. This is Broadway, baby. Be prepared. Of course Elton likes this version.
Although, Elton, I'm sure you had to sign off for them to use your music in the new one.
Fine.
So you still got that check. You can't have it both ways, Elton.
No, he's fine.
Moving on. We have to, we're going to start the show with news.
Okay.
You know, official, real news.
Yeah.
As always, I ask my panelists to describe their week of news in only three words. Kelly, you have three words this week on a story that confuses me more and more every day.
Yes.
Syria.
Yeah.
Okay.
Pause or ceasefire.
Okay, because a ceasefire was declared Thursday.
Right. So you have the White House saying, like, look, we sent Vice President Pence and Secretary of State Mike Pompeo over to Turkey, and look what we got. We got this great ceasefire. We stopped Turkey from its attack on civilians and fighters in the Kurdish region of Syria. Yay. Look at us. Go. Mm-hmm. And then immediately you had Turkish officials and American officials being like, actually, we didn't call it a ceasefire. We called it a pause.
Huh.
It's a pause in the fighting. I mean,
how long of a pause?
Parsing the two things a few days. About 5 days, right? Parsing the two things, I don't think that's really important. I think what's important is the White House, the administration trying to overplay its role and saying, look what we did.
Well, this is par for the course for them because every few months they'll say, we got a big trade deal with China or Mexico or Japan. And then you read the details and it's like, they're talking about possibly doing something someday.
But look, this is what Turkey wanted.
Really?
This isn't some great, like, look what we've done. We've saved the people. Turkey wanted the Kurdish fighters out of this area, and they're getting out of the area. So it wasn't like this big negotiation, right? It wasn't this big, like, we went and we hammered out a deal. It's like, this is exactly what Turkey wanted.
Yeah. Since Trump announced that he was going to pull out about 1,000 troops from Syria, there has been strong and visceral reaction from the left, from the right, from experts saying, this is a very, very bad thing to do for our interest and for the Kurds. Kelly, you lived and worked in the Middle East for years. Yes. You probably know more than most people how big of a deal this is.
I mean, we heard this, you know, I mean, Matt, I'm sure you've heard this a lot from political candidates. We obviously heard a ton about it in the debate the other night. You know, the Kurdish forces have been our allies for a really long time. Mm-hmm. And these are people, it goes way, 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 way back. They want one thing and one thing alone. They want autonomy, right? Mm. They want independence. Mm. Kurds live in Syria, Iraq, Turkey, Iran. They live in all these different countries. They've wanted autonomy for a long time. They work with the United States because they know that working with the United States can help them try to reach that goal.
Yeah.
It looked like they were getting there in Syria. And then all of a sudden, poof.
Yeah.
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 And so the question is, like, President Trump said something like, let them fight it out.
There's
like
plenty
a couple
of sand.
Of kids. Let the kids fight it out, and then you eventually pull them apart, right? And that's sort of his diplomacy. In a place like this, in a very volatile place like this, that is a dangerous game.
Yeah.
And it is one that actually could affect us and our national security. Mm-hmm.
I think Donald Trump has been pretty open about wanting to get out of Afghanistan as well, but this is where the complications of foreign policy, you know, the reality hits the road, which is, you know, they're bargaining with the Taliban to get out of Afghanistan, to get
right.
out of this forever war that we've been in since 2001 in that region. And yet by, you know, so transparently communicating to the Taliban during negotiations, you know, what the nation's position is, it kind of actually undercuts your position, because
exactly.
then that puts the Taliban in a stronger position
yes.
to bargain for better terms when you leave.
Exactly.
Which is exactly what happened in Syria. By saying in December, I want troops out of Syria, that signaled to Erdogan. Erdogan knew exactly what Trump's position was, and he could plan this assault from that day. And that's exactly what he did. And he knew he was in a position of power. And who is on top now? Erdogan, Turkey.
Yeah. Just to note, listeners, we are taping this conversation about Syria Friday morning. So by the time you hear it, of course, some details may have changed. You are listening to It's Been a Minute from NPR, the show where we catch up on the week that was. I'm Sam Sanders here in sunny Los Angeles with two great guests in studio, Matt Pearce, 2020 campaign reporter for the LA Times, who managed to sneak off the debate watch campaign trail stuff to hang with us for a while, and Kelly McEvers, NPR correspondent and host of the NPR podcast Embedded. So glad you both are here.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Of course. Matt, you have three words as well.
Who's the enemy?
Not me.
Not me. Who's the enemy? I watched this week's Democratic debate.
Oh, and sorry about it. How long was it?
It was more than 2 hours. And so one of these things I've been interested in, you know, this was the fifth round of the Democratic debates. There's actually been so many of them, I have to think about if that's accurate.
I know, and we are still
not.
How far out of Iowa?
There's still more than a year
away,
before 2020
away.
Election.
This is a War and Peace novel. So the thing that, you know, was most immediately grabbing to me about this last debate was the Democrats getting really down in the mud this time to fight each other. I mean, I find that really interesting because when I've been out in Iowa talking to voters about past debates that they've watched, you know, I heard over and over again that they're tired of the negativity. Overwhelmingly for them, for most of them, the biggest number one issue in this election is beating Donald Trump. But in this last debate here, you saw some really personalized attacks that were new. And so the way that I'm focusing in on this is on Mayor Pete, who had...
Yes, who was the most surprising, because his whole shtick for a long time has been like nice Midwestern mayor.
Right.
Yeah.
And he kind of took the gloves off
mm-hmm.
this week.
Yeah, he became Mean Pete, you know. And to use the professional wrestling metaphor, this was like a heel turn for him.
Was there a certain moment that really showed the Mayor Pete gloves off stance?
Yes.
Okay.
And the one that I've just been really fascinated by is when he got into it with Beto O'Rourke over gun control.
Let's follow their inspiration and lead and not be limited by the polls and the consultants and the focus groups. Let's
Mayor
do what's
Buttigieg,
right
while
we
response.
Have time to do what's right.
Mayor Buttigieg?
The problem is in the polls. The problem is the policy. And I don't need lessons from you on courage, political or personal. Everyone on this stage is determined to get something done. Everyone on this stage recognizes...
The thing that I find really interesting... I mean, there are a couple of really interesting things that are happening in this exchange between Beto O'Rourke and Pete Buttigieg, which is Beto O'Rourke... he's now saying, you know, we should have mandatory buybacks of AR-15s, of assault rifles, which
yep.
goes a step beyond where the rest of the field had been. So Pete here is saying, you know, you're pursuing this pie-in-the-sky policy. We don't really know how we're going to implement it. And so there was an actual philosophical discussion here, but that line and the way that he delivered it to Beto O'Rourke, who has kind of taken this pretty aggressive position on gun control after a mass shooting, and who, that, you know, is a liberal Democrat from Texas.
That was a strong response.
That was a strong response, and it made me wonder why. Like, why did that happen?
I think I know why, and this is for both of y'all. You know, we noticed in the 24 hours after that debate, Mayor Pete raised more than $1 million.
Right.
He got a viral moment that was on loop on these networks the whole day or two afterwards.
And so everybody was talking about him, right?
If it's cynical or not, or a ploy or not, Kelly, like, this stuff works, right?
I keep thinking about Cory Booker. Like, every time they ask Cory Booker a question or he had a chance, he's like, can we just pause? They want us to do it. They want us to fight. That we, you know, everybody knows it works cynically. But, like, don't do it, right?
But and isn't the lesson of 2016, the lesson of Trump, the lesson of right now is the fight gets the attention.
Right, and gets you the money. And doesn't that make you sad and just want to go to bed?
I mean, right after the exchange with Buttigieg and Beto, Booker comes in with that. One of those, and they asked him, like, Senator Booker, how do you feel about, you know, this policy?
This issue.
And he starts out by being like, I'm concerned about the way we're talking to each other.
I want to give other candidates a chance. Senator Booker, what's your response to Mayor Buttigieg?
Well, look, I again, worry about how we talk to each other and about each other and what this last week has shown.
To close, you know, on this idea of now we're in the season of fighting. We're in this season of fighting, still a year out from the November elections. And I think, I think it's our fault. The media, you know, quote unquote, we've scheduled how many debates already and how many more to come? We've made this season too long. So what else are you going to do but fight?
Yes. And I think the questions, too. I think I thought a lot about the questions, of course, because we're in the business of asking questions, right? Mm-hmm. But it's like there are, like, is it a tax on the middle class? Is it a tax on the middle class? Is it a tax on the middle class? Like, hammering away on that is like, that's exactly what that's about, is like to pointedly make clear what the divisions are and get people to fight.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right, coming up, we check in on Facebook. Candidates like Elizabeth Warren are fighting Facebook head-on, saying the company should be broken up. And after a big announcement a few months ago, we're finding out that this big Facebook plan to launch its own global currency, it's kind of floundering. We'll figure out what Facebook wants and if they can get it after the break. You're listening to It's Been a Minute from NPR. We'll be right back.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Sony Pictures Entertainment, presenting Black and Blue, the high-stakes action thriller in theaters October 25th. Starring Academy Award nominee Naomi Harris as a rookie cop who inadvertently captures a murder on her body cam. She teams up with the only person willing to help her, Tyrese Gibson, as she tries to escape from both the criminals out for revenge and the police who are desperate to destroy the body cam footage. Don't miss Black and Blue, only in theaters October 25th.
Support for NPR and the following message come from FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu. This message comes from NPR sponsor, Discover. Here's a familiar situation. You have a question about your credit card. You call the number for help and can't get a hold of anyone. If only you had a Discover card. With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. A real person. Get the customer service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Support for NPR and the following message come from Jarl and Pamela Moan, thanking the people who make public radio great every day and also those who listen.
Maddie Sofia here, host of Shortwave, a new daily science podcast from NPR. We'll bring you new discoveries, everyday mysteries, and the science behind the headlines, all in about 10 minutes every weekday. So you come away a little smarter, or at least you look that way, on Trivia Night. Listen and subscribe now to Shortwave from NPR.
We are back. You're listening to It's Been a Minute from NPR, the show where we catch up on the week that was. I'm Sam Sanders, joined by There's one of them. Kelly McEvers. NPR correspondent and host of the NPR podcast Embedded, and Matt Pearce, 2020 campaign reporter for the LA Times, covering 2020.
The whole thing. All of it.
How tired are you right now?
I'm status bar 60%.
That's not bad.
It's not bad. It's not great.
Yeah. All right, question for you both. Have you been following all this Facebook drama recently over political ads on the platform?
Yes.
Yeah.
Long story short, liberals are mad at Facebook for allowing conservative politicians to air ads that contain mistruths. In response, Democratic candidate Elizabeth Warren, she purposefully posted a fake political ad on Facebook this month, which said that Zuckerberg supports Trump, kind of daring Zuckerberg to take this thing off the platform.
Mm.
He did not.
Mm.
In fact, Mark Zuckerberg gave this big speech this week at Georgetown to defend this pretty wide-open policy of free speech on Facebook. We have some tape.
Practically, even if we wanted to ban political ads, it's not even clear where you draw the line. Right, there are many more ads about issues than there are directly about elections. Would we ban ads about healthcare or immigration or women's empowerment? And if you're not going to ban those, does it really make sense to give everyone else a voice in political debates except for the candidates themselves? So there are going to be issues any way you cut this.
Whatever happens, I don't think this fight's over anytime soon. And I'm also just curious as to how Facebook is doing after, gosh, a few years of really bad press coverage. So I called up my friend Molly Wood. She is the host of Marketplace Tech and the Marketplace podcast Make Me Smart. I asked her about Mark Zuckerberg's fight with politicians like Warren and all of Congress as well to see who will win and what's really going on.
This question of misinformation on Facebook obviously has only gotten stronger by the minute since roughly 2016. And I think there are a lot of questions that go beyond just, you know, it's one thing to say there's an ad on Facebook. It's another thing to say that ad might show up in Facebook's algorithm and be promoted to a bunch of users. Mm-hmm. And then it's a whole other thing when you say an army of bots might share that ad 10 million times, giving it way more attention than it ever had before.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's not, you know, I think Mark Zuckerberg is trying hard right now to make this about speech.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also very much about technology. And that's the part that's made it such a mess.
So in this fight between Zuckerberg and Capitol Hill, the face of it has become Elizabeth Warren, Democratic frontrunner for 2020. And she's kind of thrown egg in Zuckerberg's face by running this false ad on his platform, Facebook, that says falsely that he has endorsed Trump. This seems like a very strange battle. She's also argued that his company be broken up. What does it mean to see someone like her publicly say, yeah, Zuck, bring it on?
It is, you know, it is. There is speculation that, you know, in some ways, taking on Facebook is sort of an argument that everybody can understand, that it's a company where consumer sentiment is not strong, let's say. Mm-hmm. Now, that said, I do think it's fair to ask whether consumers are sitting here thinking, sure, but there are some pretty big problems in the world. And
yeah.
So it's going to be interesting to see whether that actually works as a campaign tactic, because even I, who have a lot to say about Facebook, I mean, we could do this for a while, Sam, am thinking maybe it's not the number one item on the agenda.
So then in the midst of all this ambiguity and confusion over what the role of companies like Facebook should be, Mark Zuckerberg has been making the rounds. He gave a big speech at Georgetown this week, all about free speech and how he wants Facebook to help protect that American ideal. What stood out from that speech for you?
You know, a couple things stood out. One is that he referred to Facebook as something new. He said, this is almost like, and when he says Facebook, it's a shorthand for the internet, heaven help us. but that the internet and digital communication is almost like a fifth estate, like a new form of information dissemination that we really do have to figure out how to work with, whether that's with regulation or, you know, consumer understanding of how to interpret information we see there. And I think that was actually notable and really smart. I think that Mark Zuckerberg, however, is still not owning up to the role of the technology here, the role of the manipulation that can happen on the platform, the bots, the fact that these ads may not be taken out by real people at all, that they then might be amplified by his own algorithm and served up to, you know, people who didn't ask for them. So it's one thing to say I am defending the principles of free speech, but free speech is now existing in a way that it's never existed before. And I think he needs to get a little more real with himself and us about that.
Stop getting polite. Wait, stop being polite and start getting real. Is that the real world slogan?
Life lessons.
You know, and so we have this one fight over free speech and politics in which Facebook seems to hold a lot of power over a very big thing, speech. But you compare that to their other fight in which they kind of look to be blundering and losing. This is their recent push to create their own global currency called Libra. They had this big flashy announcement a few months ago basically saying, we're making our own money now. Get in line. And so this week, though, there's news out that basically says Libra is failing big time. A lot of the big partners for this thing are pulling out, and Libra's not going to happen. What does that say about the global strength of this company or perhaps its global overreach?
I mean, that to me says really a lot about the Facebook brand and the fact that Facebook, you know, for all of its attempts to convince people, regulators, consumers, partners, it seems like people and companies and regulators just didn't buy it. I mean, what's so interesting is the disconnect, because I think Facebook probably assumed we will announce this, people will want to get on board. Mm-hmm. And you still see this, I think, with the strength of sort of employee support within Facebook, that there is still really a strong alternate reality.
Wow.
Well, I'm not going to lie to you. Like, Silicon Valley depends on a lot of alternate reality. Like, out here in the Valley, people think that life is one way. And I think they did run into sort of a buzzsaw of reality and have to pull back. But honestly, I wouldn't necessarily say, even though Libra was half-baked at launch, I'm still also not going to say that it's dead.
Gotcha. Okay. So then thinking about what Facebook's alternate reality might be, is the powerful Facebook that has the ability to change the course of elections and alter what we think of as free speech the real reality for Facebook? Or is the company that struggled with Libra and floundered and bumbled and overreached, is that the reality of Facebook? Which version of this company is real? And bigger question, should we then actually be scared of Facebook or not?
This is the moment when I kind of want to say, like, it's okay if we don't know exactly what to do because nothing like this has ever existed. On the one hand, yes, there, you know, there, it's this brilliant guy and this collection of really smart people who saw a lot of trends coming around digital advertising, around interconnection, around computer usage, and capitalized on them and made a lot of money. It's also a company who, there's no reason to think that Mark Zuckerberg, you know, he's not the Terminator. Like, he didn't magically know that 2 billion people were going to start using this platform and that people were going to figure out how to use it for misinformation. There's no, you can foresee a lot of unintended consequences, but not all of them.
Oh, yeah. Well, he just wanted to make an app that would rate hot students at his undergrad, right?
He did. Like, he just wanted this one simple thing. You know, we're all so mad at him now.
Poor Mark.
I think we, well, okay. Let's not, you know, let's not take it too far. But his ambition is not dimmed. And so I think we're going to need, as consumers and human beings, to figure out how to build up some immunity to the information that we see on these platforms. We're probably going to need a whole lot of new regulation. But I don't, it's not like the answer to these questions is sitting there and somebody's refusing to implement it. It actually is really complicated and difficult, which I know we're not good at in America right now. But that's kind of the truth.
Thank you, Molly Wood. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Sam.
Thanks again to Molly Wood, host of Marketplace Tech. She, along with friend of the show, Kai Rizdahl, hosts a really great podcast called Make Me Smart. I was on that show once. It's super fun. Matt, Kelly, my big question that I cannot figure out is, like, are we overreacting to Facebook? Is this a company that represents the end of civil discourse and moral decay? Or is it just a tech company full of folks who are a little too big for their britches and in a few years they'll end up like MySpace. I don't know.
I'm conflicted about this because, you know, as a journalist, you know, I do appreciate the way that these platforms have enabled a lot more people to make their voices heard in a way that wasn't possible before.
Yes.
You know, the problem here is that the consequences for bad speech are very diffused now. You know, if you're, you know, if I'm a journalist and if I lie and I make stuff up, you know, there are real professional consequences for me. I get fired. You know, people might criticize my employer, boycott or whatever. But if you have a ton of people who have been enabled to say false things or defamatory things, you know, there aren't really, I mean, there may be personal consequences for them, but there's not, you know, the incentives go the wrong direction. And so that to me is one of the biggest problems.
Yeah.
Yeah. Facebook's status update right now is simply time will tell. All right, it's time for a break. When we come back, my favorite game, Who Said That? You are listening to It's Been a Minute from NPR. We'll be right back.
The following message comes from our sponsor, Westin Hotels and Resorts. Chris Heisler, Global Run Westin Concierge for Westin Hotels and Resorts, has experienced firsthand the joy of making it out for your morning run while traveling.
Run Westin tries to take care of all of those obstacles and give you a reason to wake up next morning and feel good about going for that run. We have gear lending, so you pay $5, we'll send you up a pair of running shoes and socks to go for that run or walk. Every Westin hotel has a map at the front desk that offers you either a 3-mile route or a 5-mile route. Now we have over 200 run concierges around the world, and that to me is very powerful. They're full-time associates. They might be the bellman, they might be the general manager, they might be the executive chef, but they're so passionate about running that they lead a run for guests twice a week. I think there's something quite authentic about that experience.
Explore at Westin.com, a member of Marriott Bonvoy.
Hey, it's Guy Raz here, host of the TED Radio Hour from NPR. And on our latest episode, we're exploring anger, what it is when you feel it, whether some get to feel it more openly than others, and why. Listen now.
You're listening to It's Been a Minute from NPR, the show where we catch up on the week that was. I'm Sam Sanders, joined in studio by two guests, Matt Pearce, 2020 campaign reporter for the LA Times, and Kelly McEvers, host of the NPR podcast Embedded. Y'all, it is time for my favorite game. Who said that?
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 Let it play. Let it play.
Yeah, I love it.
Y'all know how this game goes. You're both veterans of it. Actually, you can turn it off now. Sorry.
No.
Sorry. This game is quite simple. I share three quotes from the week. You have to guess who said that, or at least get the story that I'm referring to.
Wait, do we have to just call it out? I forgot
to call it out. No buzzers.
Oh,
Matt
okay.
is putting his game face
you.
On.
I'm focusing.
Looking at you. Yeah.
Here we go. First quote. It's older than my age, so I'm pretty thrilled with it. An athlete who made history this week.
Billie Jean King?
No, I love her. A very high-performing woman athlete.
It's older than my age.
Serena?
I'll give you a really big keyword. Gymnastics.
Simone Biles.
Yes. Oh, Kelly got it by a hair. Kelly got it by a hair. So that was Simone Biles reacting to winning her 25th gymnastics gold medal.
Oh.
This week, she won two golds at the World Championships, and she became the most decorated gymnast in all of recorded history. She is only 22.
Oh, God. So I see we were thrown. We were trying to think of somebody older.
She was saying that her number of medals is now more than her age.
I was thinking about Serena, too.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
They've been naming moves after her
because
she can do
them. Nobody's ever been able to do them before.
And she's always just, like, really cheerful and happy and optimistic. Yep. Simone Biles' energy is what I want.
Yep.
Lucky to have her.
Kelly, you're on your way to becoming the Simone Biles of Who Said That.
Oh.
You've got a point.
Just, like, all the...
all the medals. All right, next quote. Ready? With the consent of the parents and baseball fans at the Department of Justice, this request is unopposed.
Oh, this federal judge letting an attorney postpone a case so they can go watch the World Series.
Yes, close enough.
Baseball.
Yes.
Or watch, Watch a playoff game. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So that was senior U.S. District Court Judge Rosemary M. Collier granting a lawyer's request to postpone legal proceedings so he and his 9-year-old son could watch a Washington Nationals baseball playoff game. They are going to the World Series.
Talking about the Nets.
I know we are. So D.C. hasn't sent a baseball team to the World Series since 1933.
No, it's great.
Kelly's mad because she likes the Dodgers.
Right.
I like the Dodgers too.
No. It's fine. Actually, the Nats are a super fun team to watch right now.
Oh, and, nice save.
Super... No, they are. They're like a super fun team to root for. I actually mean that, even though they beat the Dodgers.
I'm a Royals fan, so I feel zero emotions right now.
Oh, Royals.
Congrats, Nats fans, I guess. I love it. This game is tied.
Oh.
Which of you will be the Nats and which will be the Dodgers?
Watch it.
Going to be the Royals.
Final quote. You ready? Just play the quote.
Hello. Hello. Let me out. Where the Hello.
All right. Y'all might not be able to guess who said it, but guess where that was said. What is the one place where you don't want to hear someone say, hello, hello, let me out, it's dark in here? The one event where someone is supposed to be in the dark going down into the ground.
A funeral?
Yes.
I had heard about the story. I didn't know there was audio.
There was audio. All right. So this story.
Event.
Yes. That was a voice of Shea Bradley. He was a prankster even in death. Before he died recently, he recorded some audio to be played as his coffin was lowered into the ground at his funeral in Dublin, Ireland. The audio was his own voice saying, let me out, let me out. Then you hear knocking, and then the voice says, it's dark in here.
Hello? Let me out.
In a reaction that would not be my own, all the funeral goers laughed. I would have ran the heck out of that cemetery.
I would have resuscitated my loved one and murdered them.
The only message that I would have pre-recorded to be played as my casket was lowered into the ground would be, you got me the cheap casket. I wanted the cherry wood. I will say, Matt, you lived through this competition
you
won it.
You Simone Biles did.
Yes, you did. Congratulations.
Congrats. Thank you.
That's just, all you're going to react?
Well, no, I was just thinking about what I would play if I was being lowered into the ground. And they'll never find me Lucky Charms.
I like that. Congrats to both of the contestants. All right. Now it's time to end the show as we always do. We ask our listeners to share with us the best things that have happened to them all week. We encourage folks to brag. They always do. Anjali, hit the tape.
Hey, Sam. The best thing that happened to me all week is that I have jury duty. Yes, I'm that kind of nerd. I have wanted to do jury duty since I turned 18, and I am stoked. Have a good week.
Hi, Sam. This is Jenny.
And Nico.
And the best thing to happen to us this week was that we got engaged.
The best thing about this week was that after 4 years of studying and testing, I can finally call myself an architect.
The best thing that's happened to me this week is that I turned 50.
We bought a new home in the beautiful Black Hills of South Dakota.
The best part of my week was traveling to the Maryland Renaissance Festival.
My husband and I took our almost 3-year-old daughter to a fall festival at a local orchard.
Hi, Sam. This is Daphne. And the best thing that happened to me this week actually happened last week when we took a family trip to Ethiopia and took our almost 8-year-old son back to the land of his birth, where he had not been since he was 17 months old when we adopted him. It was a really eye-opening experience.
My name's Eve, and I'm calling from Denver, and the best thing that happened to me this week is in honor of National Coming Out Day, my 14-year-old came out as transgender male to the entire family, and I am so happy and proud of him, and so happy to have the family that I have.
Thanks.
Thanks, Sam.
Love the show.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
That was beautiful.
Yeah.
I really love that. Yeah.
Matt and I both agreed silently that we like jury duty.
I love jury duty.
I love jury duty.
Okay.
Sam's like, okay, I asked the nerds.
Someone from getting evicted last time.
Oh, that's nice.
Wow.
That's nice.
I'm just like, look at all the people.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know?
Yeah.
Thanks to all those listeners you heard there. Sarah, Jenny and Nico, Greg, Dave, Linda, Chris, Rachel, Daphne, and Eve. Congrats to you and your child, Eve. Thanks to everyone that shares these with us. We listen to all of them, even if we can't play all of them here on the show. Keep them coming. Record the sound of your voice and send that voice file to me at samsanders@npr.org. samsanders@npr.org. Thanks to my guests, who are always prepared. Kelly McEvers, NPR correspondent and host of the NPR podcast Embedded, and Matt Pearce, 2020 campaign reporter for the LA Times, covering 2020.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
This week, the show was produced by Brent Bachman, Anjali Sastry, and Jason Fuller. Our fearless editors are Kitty Isley and Alex McCall. Our director of programming is Steve Nelson. Our big boss is NPR's senior VP of programming, Anya Grundman. And thanks to our engineer, Josh Newell.
Woo.
Closing out the show as we began the show with this lackluster remake of Be Prepared from the Lion King reboot featuring a guy I like. Should we tell Edgeo for?
Perfectly serviceable.
He's singing sometimes.
This song is likable enough.
Yeah.
This song is likable enough.
Is it electable?
That's the question. That's the question. All right, listeners, thanks so much for everything and all that you do. Don't forget to fill out that survey. Until next time, I'm Sam Sanders. Talk soon. Be
prepared. This message comes from NPR sponsor Charles Schwab with their original podcast, Choiceology, hosted by Katie Milkman, an award-winning behavioral scientist and author of the best-selling book, How to Change. Choiceology is a show about the psychology and economics behind people's decisions. Hear true stories from Nobel laureates, authors, athletes, and more about why people do the things they do. Download the latest episode and subscribe at schwab.com/podcast or wherever you listen. Support for NPR and the following message come from Rosetta Stone, the perfect app to achieve your language learning goals no matter how busy your schedule gets. It's designed to maximize study time with immersive 10-minute lessons and audio practice for your commute. Plus, tailor your learning plan for specific objectives like travel. Get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off and unlimited access to 25 language courses. Learn more at rosettastone.com/NPR.
In this country, some truths aren't self-evident. In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, a collection of stories as wide-ranging and real as the people who tell them, we celebrate the Black experience for all its soul and richness. Search NPR Black Stories, Black Truths wherever you get podcasts.